Is excitement about signs of the end of the world healthy for Christians? Welcome again to The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund, your host and study guide author. My conversation partners for this quarter are Jennifer Ogden and Troy Fitzgerald, who serve as pastors at the Walla Walla University Church. And we're continuing our 13-week study, going through the book of Matthew. Somewhat quickly, it feels, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I wish we could spend a lot more time on it. But today, we have gotten to come to the end of Jesus' ministry on earth. We are in the closing week of Jesus' life, and we have Jesus and his disciples who have spent some time in the temple. They have now left the temple. Jesus has uttered a scathing rebuke to the Pharisees and the Sadducees and pointed out the beauty of a widow's offering. And now he and his disciples have crossed the Kidron Valley. They've gone up to one of Jesus' favorite places, the Mount of Olives. And maybe, have you gentlemen and lady been there, the Mount of Olives?
I have. It was a fantastic experience to be able to watch the sunset from there.
And olive trees still growing there.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Amazing.
Looking at the Temple Mount, it was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and from that vantage, a beautiful view of where the old temple would have sat. Today there is, of course, a Muslim mosque, but back then it would have been Herod's temple. And Jesus and his disciples are looking at this temple, and the disciples say to Jesus, "Look, what amazing stones, what marvelous buildings." Jesus shocks them with his answer, doesn't he?
Yeah.
What does he say to them that rocks them?
I tell you the truth that not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down.
Why would this surprise them? We're at the beginning of Matthew 24. Why would this surprise the disciples? Just architecturally, what's the big deal about the temple that is so shocking?
Well, these stones are massive. I mean, they are cut out, they're hewn, but they're huge. I mean, I can't reach across one with my arms. They're massive, massive stones. So the idea of moving them is just beyond atrocious.
How the engineers got them there in the first place is surprising. We don't fully understand. There are theories out there, but some of these I've heard are the size of small school buses.
They are huge.
That's a big stone.
Yeah.
But for the disciples to hear Jesus say that the temple would be torn down, how does this fit with their messianic expectations and with their hopes in Jesus as the Messiah? How does this fit?
Well, and I think even just what we've talked about last week, Jesus is in the temple saying this place is precious to God, and now he's saying it's going to be destroyed. I mean, it's quite a dichotomous statement that he's saying. I think it's strange to them. This place is precious and sacred because we encounter God here.
And God is going to let it be destroyed?
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be the end of the earth.
Yeah.
It's got to be the end of life as we know it in this era. Mm-hmm. Or
this old age is going to be done away with. There's a new age coming that won't need a temple anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or a rebuilt temple. And the disciples asked Jesus three questions. As we look through Matthew 24, we won't be able to cover all of it, but these three questions: when will this happen? They want to know timing. Mm-hmm. Second of all, what is the sign of your coming and the sign of the end of the age? Mm-hmm. And the word for your coming is an important one in Matthew 24, as well as throughout the rest of the New Testament. The Greek word parousia, it means to be present beside, but it came to mean the arrival of a king to his conquered territory. And I know we have some other denominations or faiths who believe that it's just the presence of God with us in a spiritual sense, but it appears the way it's used in the New Testament is that of the indication of Jesus' second coming.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Would you agree? Is that
absolutely
fair? So Jesus then is being asked a question about his coming as king. Maybe not quite the way they expect, but the arrival when Jesus finally sets up his kingdom. That's what they're hoping for. What sorts of signs does Jesus give? Does he answer their question straight up?
No. He starts listing some more immediate historical things, but it's a warning. I mean, after asking this question, his first response is, wait a minute, watch out that no one deceives you. So in their earnestness about what might happen in the future, his first impulse is to say, beware of deception.
Mm-hmm. Do you see people who are worried that they could be deceived in today's Christian world? Have people taken that seriously? Have people taken it too far? What would you say?
I would say that they have taken it too far. I would say I've seen it quite a bit. There is a fear, and fear does not necessarily drive you to truth. When Jesus asks people to watch out that no one deceives you, he's asking you to be discerning, not scared, not reactive, not impulsive, not superficial, not trusting in your own eyesight or listening to what somebody else might say. Or, in other words, don't be the person that will leap just because someone says so.
Be thoughtful,
be discerning, because deception, you know, really only deceives the people who aren't thinking things through.
Watch out. What's going to happen? He says false Christs are going to come. And then there's other signs. I read through this list, and I see that there are going to be wars, rumors of wars. Would you say that describes our era today?
Era then, too.
Yeah, theirs as well. Very shortly after Christ's.
Yeah, but definitely now. We have been on the brink of war, and some would suggest there's a war on everything now. There's a war on terror. There's a war on drugs. There's a war on carbohydrates. There's a war on everything.
War on fossil fuels, you name it there. Yeah. There's a war. He goes on and he says that kingdom is going to rise against kingdom, and there will be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in various places. Now, you two have traveled a bit. I know, I know, Jennifer, you've been, is it New Zealand even?
Yes, yeah.
In your travels, as you two have been around the world, would you say that you've seen these sorts of things happen?
Yeah. Yes.
I grew up in California, so the earthquake thing has always been there. I've been through several of those.
Yeah.
But no, you go to different parts of the world, and they're immediately aware of stories from their experience in their lifetime of serious things that have happened.
Yeah.
Signs of the end. Would you say that these are signs of the end of the world, or are these signs of the continuance of the world? I don't know how to phrase it, maybe, because I read these, and then Jesus says, verse 8 of Matthew 24, all these are the beginning of sorrows. And I have to wonder, how discouraging.
But I like calling them those things like sorrows instead of signs. They're asking not for signs. They're asking for a singular word. The word that they ask for, what will be
the sign?
The sign. That only appears one more time.
And what, I feel like we'd be skipping ahead, but we can't cover all of it. What is the sign that Jesus gives? Finally, the sign that he gives of his coming. He lists all these things. He talks about false prophets arising. He talks about disciples being taken before kings and giving a testimony. He speaks about a great tribulation to come, the abomination of desolation. He keeps listing event after event after event.
Sun and moon darken, stars fall from the sky, all those things. But then in verse 30, it says, at that time, you will see, right, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and all the nations of the earth will mourn. What's the sign? They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky.
There's your sign.
Yeah.
Jesus has arrived. When you see him.
What kind of preparation, then, can I do?
I think that's the point.
Yeah. Well, I think there's got to be a consistency to our faith and our connection with God. We can't just suddenly prepare for something that we don't know exactly when it's going to happen. And, you know, I mean, I know we've got people who have stockpiled enough big Franks to feed the world, but I think that God is talking about a different kind of preparation, that we must be ready at any second for the arrival of Christ.
So since we don't know the day or the hour, Jesus says, be ready.
Be ready. And then he gives, at the end of chapter 24 and through chapter 25, a number of parables. Of these parables, is there one that strikes you that says, man, this has the message that we need today? A parable of 10 virgins who don't have oil, a parable of sheep and the goats, a parable of a servant who's put in charge of the master's kingdom or his household, and one servant does feed the household and the other doesn't. He gets drunk and says, oh, my master's delaying. What do we learn from these parables? Is there one that strikes you as really valuable?
I think we can learn different things from all of them, but I think they have the same underlying foundation, which is an intensity to Christ's message that he's sharing with his disciples. Is if you know about this message and you know I'm coming back, be ready for it. Be ready for it and make sure others are prepared as well.
It's about today. It's about what you do today. Everyone in every parable, it has that quality. What did you do today? We're waiting today, but while waiting, were you prepared? Were you ready? Did you do the extra work? I think people who are ready at the second coming are those who think about the second coming. They don't dismiss it. I think the same thing with the talents. What did you do today? And then finally, the today comes in. I mean, this is not even a parable at the end, really. It's just an indictment. When you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it unto me. If you want to know what the sign of the second coming is, it's this coming. If you want to know what it looks like, those who are going home, you can see the sign of the saved people in these three parables. Here's what they're about.
Mm-hmm. I get an idea through several of them that there is a waiting period. In the parable at the end of Matthew 24, my master has delayed his coming. In the parable of the wise and foolish virgins, the bridegroom is delayed and they fall asleep. And in the parable of the talents, you know, we are waiting for the master to come back from a long journey. This sense of waiting, how does that play into being ready? This idea of waiting, because if I'm ready for an event that I don't know when it's going to happen, but it continues to be put off, what's the danger?
I think the danger is to become very lax and you know, not think that it's a big deal and not be concerned about the idea that someone is coming. And that's an important thing to be prepared for. I think we can get slack in our faith and in the exercise thereof. I mean, we talked at the beginning of this quarter about John the Baptist. 2,000 years ago, he's saying, make ready the way of the Lord. What am I doing today? I mean, part of this list that Christ talks to his disciples about is sharing the message of Christ. The gospel will go to every nation. You know, how am I participating in the things that are forwarding the kingdom today?
Like you said, Troy, what are we doing today? Being ready now, right, Jen? Without losing our zeal for that event that has delayed for 2,000 years, you know, how I'd love it to be in our time. Yes. Love it to be today. I'd love for Jesus to come back. But we await that great event. And should Christ wait another week, we will meet again next week. And we will talk about the last days of Jesus, his closing hours on earth. And I'm looking forward to that time. Thank you, Troy and Jen, for spending some time studying with me, conversing about the subject. My thanks also to David Olson, our program engineer, and to Jared Miller, who is helping him, and also to all of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Brant Berglund.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.